Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Death, taxes, putting on a mask, washing your hands, and Manchester United coming from behind to win away from home. That's life in autumn 2020. Welcome to the Manchester United Weekly Podcast, where yes, we are yet again talking about the world's most confusing football team, shambolic in the first half, intense and stylish in the second. 3-1 winners against West Ham. The scoreline was the other way round when United hosted Paris Saint-Germain in midweek. We're dissecting both games, their wide implications, and what they mean going forward for United. As always, I'll bring you your regular youth loan and women's roundup in a spectacularly good weekend all round for Manchester United. Wins all round, near or top of the league for all teams as well. You can hear that at about 20 minutes or so. And then we're going to look ahead to games against Red Bull Leipzig or Rasenball Sports Leipzig, a crucial Champions League group stage game and the last one of the group stages. But Jack, I think the place for me to start before we talk about inconsistency and how just how confusing this United team are is to start with a specific player. And this week it isn't Bruno Fernandes, even though his impact was once again magnificent, but Marcus Rashford, who came off against PSG with a shoulder injury, was rested by Ole Gunnar Solskjaer at the start of the game because of that injury, and comes off the bench at halftime and offered a world-class influence as a substitute.
I don't think Rashford has had, probably not had the start of the season that we or he wanted or expected, but the dynamism that he offers when he's on the pitch is completely undeniable, especially compared to Martial. I mean, the influence that he had on the game when he came off the bench against West Ham was massive. As soon as he came on, we looked like a completely different team. And obviously, that's not just down to him. As you said, Bruno Fernandes plays a big part in that as well. But Rashford does offer us something that I don't think any of our other forwards do. Even when the quality in the final pass or the shot isn't necessarily there, he's always, always involved in creating for us on the pitch. It's almost a guarantee when he plays, when he's on the pitch, that you know, we're going to be creating chances and they'll probably have something to do with him, whether it's his off the ball movement, whether it's his ability to beat a man. And that's not something, that's not a guarantee that you get with any of our other forward options. He's not always perfect and obviously his game can still develop a lot. But I think, you know, when you look at the way we play with and without him, it's a stark difference.
It was watching that second half and you were watching a player that was so driven and also so effective. And there was a missed chance, which he then made up for. He had 2 one-on-ones with Fabianski, put away the second one with a glorious chip, missed the first one. But it's just that directness and drive that you get from Rashford. No matter the situation, he pushes for goal. I think the same can be said of Mason Greenwood and Bruno Fernandes, but not of some of United's other midfield and attacking options. It doesn't matter the situation in the game. Those three players will always look as if they're searching for that goal as quickly as possible. And
they look dangerous whenever they're on the pitch, which is, obviously looks can be deceiving at times. It's not always going to come off, but that is a big deal, I think.
Yeah. And it's I think what makes Rashford's performance and season all the more impressive is the comparison to Anthony Martial, the comparison which we've kind of had for 5 years. But I mean, yeah, there have been moments where Rashford could have been better this season. This certainly wasn't one of them. He was at his very best, and when he's at his very best, he's so good to watch as well. So exciting. But as someone pointed out after his contribution on Saturday, Rashford has as many or more goals and assists since the start of the 2019-20 campaign last season as Sadio Mane, Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, Raheem Sterling and Heung-min Son. Although Son's goal and assist against Arsenal means he's just ahead of Rashford now. But that is for a player that is...
quite a few months out injured in the middle of last season as well.
Yeah, and for a player that is kind of never considered amongst those three other names or the very elite of the Premier League, his consistent goal contributions are brilliant, and he was just fantastic to watch. And the comparison to Martial is interesting because Rashford is at his most productive that he's ever been, and Martial the least. You look at the goal involvement per 90 minutes, Rashford is at a career high of just under one goal contribution, goal or assist, every 90 minutes. And Martial is at a career low of 0.2 every 90 minutes. So stark contrast, but I love seeing Marcus Rashford do well. And it was him and Bruno Fernandes who changed the game. But we have this confusion again. United so terrible in the first half and so good in the second, unlike Southampton last week where we were actually fine in the first half but trailed and then very good in the second.
Yeah,
it's a really hard one, and the conclusion that I think some people were coming to at half time is that these first halves tell a story of an undercoached team. I think it's hard to disagree with that because it doesn't actually matter who the starting lineup is, because Bruno and Rashford weren't in the starting lineup against West Ham, but they were against Southampton, and still both second halves were poor.
And for the other seven games that came before it.
Yeah, exactly. So is it just inconsistency? Is it being undercoached? It's a tough one to answer, and it makes it even tougher when every time United have one of these terrible first halves where you come to the conclusion at halftime that this is an undercoached team, that Solskjaer isn't doing enough to put his team out in the right position. They then come back and win in pretty comfortable style.
I feel like every week I watch this team and think that I'm getting somewhere with, you know, what we're like and the kind of team we are, and being able to put a finger on who this Manchester United team is, and then it just completely goes out the window. I mean, I think this West Ham game is slightly different to some of the other games where we've gone behind. I think this is more similar to, say, the Brighton game in the second week of the season rather than, say, the Southampton or Everton wins. I mean, let's deal with the positive first. The second half was very, very good. You know, the way we came back into the game was brilliant. The impact that Bruno Fernandes, Marcus Rashford had, Mason Greenwood's performance in the second half, Paul Pogba's performance in the second half, even Juan Mata when he came on was very good as well. You know, this is really, really good stuff. And you watch us play like that and you just think, why aren't we a brilliant team? And we look like one at times.
Yeah.
And I think in terms of the undercoaching, I think there's been so much debate about whether these are just inconsistent players or a group of players that are undercoached. I don't think they're mutually exclusive. I think we're both. And that's down to both the players and the coaching staff, in my opinion. It's one thing to have the odd bad game, the odd bad performance, and that happens. But it's becoming, at least in halves of games, far too frequent. And it is worrying. You know, regardless of the fact that we're winning all these games, you wonder if this is really a sustainable way for us to play, to keep falling behind and keep relying on our ability to be resilient and come back and beat these teams.
Surely we'll come unstuck at some point.
Right, exactly. It doesn't feel like something that can go on for that much longer. Surely one team is going to nick an early goal and then be able to sustain 90 minutes against us. And it's stopping me from getting really excited about a team that, to be honest, we probably should be quite excited about, because we're only 2 points off the top of the league with our game in hand. We're playing really good football at times, showing a lot of resiliency, a really good sort of spirit of unity in the squad. But these halves are stopping me from getting excited, because just when I think we may have turned a corner, we put in a performance like we did in the first 45 minutes at the London Stadium. And obviously we ended up winning the game, which is great and ultimately the most important thing, but I don't think we can just write off that first half. And that's kind of what worries me sometimes about these games, is that we end up winning and we don't really focus on how bad we were for parts of it. You know, we were diabolical for the first 45 minutes. And to be honest, we were lucky to still be in with the chance of making a comeback, because we should have been about 3 or 4 nil down at halftime.
Yeah. And it's a strange one, because that I think that should be more concerning than it is, because against Brighton, they didn't take advantage of how many chances they had. The same was true with Southampton, actually. The same is true with West Ham. The two, West Ham and Brighton, are the two main ones.
And yeah, West Brom absolutely. At home as well.
And I think because we've survived it so many times now, we're becoming complacent. And it makes you, we should think, what happens when we come against a big team who can finish better and we get done? And that's what happened against Tottenham. But generally, it hasn't happened against the big teams, because we play quite differently. So it's a strange one to get your head around. And I guess if we're talking about undercoached and inconsistency, what is it in the first half that makes us so bad? Because there are some individual defensive mistakes. Sure, against Southampton, there was the giving away of the foul by Fred for the Ward-Prowse free kick, the giving away the corner, and the fact that Bednarek got above Alex Telles and scored. Against West Ham, sure, there were individual defensive mistakes. But what is the consistent thing over these five away games where we've been terrible in the first half? I think it's often tempo, the fact that United play slow, that there's not enough movement, and retaining of possession. And you look through the United side, and when you think about those three things, lack of movement, lack of tempo, and inability to keep the ball, does it surprise you, given the players in there? Not necessarily, because for all of those things, you can find players who suffer from that as a weakness, from Pogba, who gives the ball away, Bruno, who gives the ball away, Fred, who gives the ball away, or a lack of tempo. Again, Pogba, Martial, even Rashford sometimes, and a lack of movement. Again, Martial, Rashford, and sometimes even Greenwood when he's playing in his United team. So there is, that's what's strange, is that it doesn't surprise you, but it should have been something that's fixed by the coaching staff, and it's not. And again, I go back to this point that I think we mentioned a couple of weeks ago, that there's just, you don't see those regular patterns of play within the United team that make you think that this is an attacking lineup who regularly do the same things, apart from kind of just intuitively counter-attacking whenever the space becomes available.
Yeah, and I think this is why I'm not willing to just say that this, we have a group of inconsistent players, because it's not just that we come out and we put in completely different bad performances every week. That to me would suggest, you know, this is a group of players who just from week to week are very inconsistent. Sure, we're inconsistent in the fact that we have good halves and we have bad halves, and we have good games, we have bad games. But in all of those sort of bad stretches, whether it's 45 minutes or 90 minutes, it's pretty much the same thing all the time. You know, it's that we don't have any patterns of play moving forward. We can't keep the ball. Defensively, we look shaky, and it's the same thing every single time. You go back and watch the Brighton performance at the Amex in the second game in the season and the first half at West Ham. They're almost identical. It's almost exactly the same. We couldn't get anything going. The same thing against West Brom as well at home a couple of weeks ago. That's the worry for me, and that's why I think it's fair to say that this is still an undercoached team. And that's not to say that, you know, Solskjaer needs to go and he's not good enough or anything like that. But I think it's fair to point out that criticism and that failure of the coaching staff. It's one thing to, you know, just have a group of players that from week to week put in completely different performances. But in some ways, we're actually not putting in different performances. We're just repeating the same performance over and over that happens to be sort of a game of two halves. And again, as you said, it's not down to a specific group of players. We rotated a lot this week, which I think was actually the right decision from Solskjaer. you know, rested a lot of our big guns, and it was the same thing over and over again.
And they've, it's, yeah, again, it's not to say that Solskjaer should go, because as we're going to talk about in the bonus Q&A after, there was a graphic going around showing that United are second in the league table if you count results since January. And that, I think that's kind of forgotten because of how confusing this United team are, is that actually in 2020, United have been one of the best teams in the country going by results. The thing is, and there'll be questions about Solskjaer's coaching staff as well, if these fine margins start to turn the other way. And that's the thing, that football is such a game of fine margins, and United have been the beneficiary of that, I think, this season. Maybe not against Arsenal or Chelsea, but, or even PSG in midweek. But in general, I think we've been a beneficiary of those fine margins. We've come out on top, and that could all change.
Some VAR calls to go our way.
Yeah. Yeah. But the positive, I think, is that United now have a reputation, of a mentally very good squad that can cope with going behind. That's certainly not something that was true last season or the season before. But also there's this reputation of United now as a team that will come back in some form in the second half and will score at least one, and often three. Yeah, we've scored three times or more in all of our away league games this season, and it's three on all of them except one, in which it was four at Newcastle. It's nine away wins on the bounce. We're a couple of points off the league, and the fact that people know we're going to come back and do something in the second half means that teams are less likely to sit back on 1-0 leads if they know that United are going to score anyway. So they know they're going to need a second, and that in turn opens up space. And it's kind of a positive feedback loop of it's just a very good thing. And that definitely is a positive, and will benefit United going forward, and will mean that this will probably happen again and again.
Yeah, I mean, at this point in the season, you can't really see us doing anything else. And I think it really is, it's so difficult to judge this United team, because something has got to give. Something has got to give here. You can't, like, we cannot and we will not go through this whole season, you know, away from home, going 1-0 down at halftime, 2-0 down at halftime, and coming back to win games 3-0, or sorry, 3-1, 3-2, 4-1. It's not going to happen. And it's so difficult to know whether the way that that's going to break is that we're actually going to become a better team in the first half, stop letting teams get a head start on us, and then still be this good attacking team that can take advantage of teams' weaknesses. Or is it going to be that teams are just going to get a bit better against us defensively, and we're not going to be able to, you know, kill these games off and stay in them? Maybe they will start taking their chances. I mean, I don't love using expected goals to judge a team's performance, but I'm sure a lot of our listeners saw the stat at halftime that our expected goals were 0.07. I mean, that is honestly laughable. That is a joke. I think you'd have more expected goals if you just actually sat on the edge of your own box the whole time and sent one man forward. I mean, I think West Ham's was up at about 2.5. So, you know, we were lucky to be in the game at that point, and you worry how much longer we can keep that up, and is our luck gonna run out and teams start taking these chances against us? You know, and we saw what happens when that does occur, and teams take their chances against us, against Spurs in the 6-1. And to be brutally honest, I don't think our first half performance against West Ham was any better than that first half against Spurs. The difference was that they didn't take their chances. But then you look at the flip side of it and you say, well, all right, if we can just shore things up a little bit, maybe get a little bit tactically smarter in the first half, maybe have some better plans for these teams, we could be unstoppable. You know, if we just can get to half time at 0-0 in these games, well, we'll be winning every game 3 or 4-0. So I'm sitting here and I'm trying to make sense. And for listeners, feel like we have almost an obligation in some ways to try and say this is what's going on and explain things. I honestly don't know. I haven't got a clue who this Man United team is at the moment.
Yeah. Let's run through a few positive things. Mason Greenwood's utter dynamite. What a goal. The touch is world class. The finish is as tidy as it always is with Greenwood. And that's kind of what he's there to do. If he doesn't do anything all game but pulls that out, that's absolutely fine.
Yeah, it was a brilliant finish and a reminder of just how talented and how naturally gifted Mason Greenwood is. It's obviously been, for reasons both on and off the pitch, not the best start to this season for him, but credit to Solskjaer, I think, for keeping faith in him, for hiding him from the limelight for a little bit, but keeping faith with him. And, you know, he didn't play amazingly against West Ham, but when he got his chance, he took it. And I think that really describes Mason Greenwood down to a T. And there was, you know, Gary Neville on commentary for Sky Sports was saying that he thinks Mason Greenwood is the best footballer out of the three of Greenwood, Martial and Rashford. I think for someone who's so involved with the club and has such a good understanding of how these players look coming through the youth system or when we sign them, I think that's a big statement and a big sign of just the faith that people in the know have about Mason Greenwood. That kind of natural striking ability doesn't come easy and is the sign of someone who, as long as he can stay on the straight and narrow and, you know, have a good support system around him, which he looks like he does with Solskjaer, who's looking after him very well. I mean, the sky is the limit for Greenwood.
Yeah, 20 goals now and 65 games he's played for United already at the age of 19.
He's the youngest player, I think, to reach 20 goals since Norman Whiteside for us.
Yeah, he is. Another great goal, Paul Pogba, finally coming up big for United. And actually had a pretty good game all round, was one of the left bad players in the first half, gave away the ball a couple of times as he always does, but also kind of helped United escape the
attack. It was probably the only player actually driving us forward in any way, even if it didn't always come off.
His was a fantastic goal, so well taken. And it was funny because I watched the game back because we just left Sky Sports on all day in the house and they replayed the whole thing and it was kind of on in the background. But it reminded me that Pogba had a similar chance in the first half that he...
I think it was straight at Fabianski.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Straight at Fabianski. And it just that one attempt in the first half gets it absolutely spot on in the second. Beautiful goal. But yeah, played all right. And it was interesting to hear what he said about the impact of having coronavirus on his game. He spoke about how out of breath he was finding himself in training and in his first game back, and that the kind of impact, the amount of it surprised him. And it's interesting to consider because plenty of players have had it, and I think maybe we underestimate the effect of it the long term effect of it on footballers.
Yeah, I mean, we're seeing more and more examples now of this long COVID, that I think, as it's now sort of being called. And this isn't just, you know, a cold that you get over in a couple of weeks. This has sort of long-term effects, whether it's something that affects you all the time, just when you're sitting down and, you know, wheezing, or if it's something that really impacts your cardiovascular system when you're working hard. It is something to keep an eye on. I worry for players that have had COVID, and potentially this could be something that shortens their career really badly. I wonder actually if this is something affecting Alex Tellez at the moment as well, because since the first game that he played for United against PSG and then he contracted COVID after that, he just hasn't seemed at the races, and I wonder if there's something similar going on there. But I think Pogba deserves credit for that performance. He wasn't spectacular, but I think he did enough. He was one of our better players in the first half. And I've got to say, I was not very happy with Solskjaer at halftime for the subs that he made. And I still don't think he made the right subs, but he was proven correct in the end. You know, I thought one of Pogba or McTominay should probably have come off. But in the end, he was vindicated with the way that Pogba responded. And that goal is exactly why you have someone like Paul Pogba in the team, because they can create moments like that.
Yeah. And I was impressed by Harry Maguire as well. And we'll talk about Bruno in a second, but Maguire did everything right and has done for for a few weeks now, and is a very calming influence at the back for United, I think, and is in some of his best form and looking like the player that we needed in defence when we signed him. And that's a huge positive. But Bruno Fernandes, we've talked about Rashford changing the game at halftime, but we created three chances in the first half against West Ham. Bruno Fernandes came on at halftime and created five in the first 28 minutes he was on the pitch, and ended up with eight, completely transformed the game. You do run out of ways to describe his brilliance and his importance to the team, but it's worth saying again and again and again, because he is just an utterly brilliant player, and thank God we signed him.
I kind of get almost scared thinking about where we would be without Bruno Fernandes at this point. I mean, you do wonder how, you know, how low we would have finished last season, where we would be this season if we hadn't have managed to get him in January. But I'm running out of things to say. I think we should probably change the title of this podcast to the Bruno Fernandes Weekly Podcast, because that pretty much is what Manchester United is at the moment. We've managed to go 20 minutes without speaking about him, but to be honest, we could have spent the last 20 minutes just talking about everything he does on the pitch.
Yeah.
In classic Bruno Fernandes style, it wasn't perfect, but without a doubt, the most effective, the most transformative, the most impactful player on the pitch by an absolute mile, even though he was only on for 45 minutes.
Yeah.
And it's not just, you know, he only had one assist against West Ham. He didn't necessarily have the numbers in terms of goal involvements, but look at, I think every single one of our goals, he was involved in the build-up. He makes the assist for Pogba. He's the one that lays the ball off to Mata, I believe, for the assist for Rashford. You know, he's just on another level. He really is. The way that he moves the ball so quickly, and it causes a bit of trouble sometimes, but at least five or six times every single game at this point, he's just doing things, operating a completely different speed, a completely different standard, just different vision to every single player on the pitch. And it really is unbelievable. I don't think I've ever seen a signing come to United and have such a big impact straight away. I mean, he's now probably nearing 50 games for United, I would have thought. Actually, no, probably not that. Probably about 35 games for United. And I mean, I honestly can't think of any player that's had such a massive impact on us. Maybe except Van Persie. But I'd argue that Fernandes is probably having a bigger impact than Van Persie did, just because he's dragging a much worse team forward than Van Persie was.
Van Persie was the cherry on top and the kind of the final piece of the jigsaw. Fernandes is the centerpiece, the first piece of the jigsaw.
Yeah.
It's the final thing I say, and yeah, you're right, we could have started the podcast by talking about Bruno and ended it, but we have spoken about him so much that I thought we should talk about Rashford and others instead, just to provide some variety. But yeah, you're right, Bruno on 38 appearances for United, only four of them off the bench, and 22 goals and so many assists.
It's almost annoying to think this, but do you wonder where we might have ended up last season if we had have brought him in last summer when Solskjaer wanted him, like in the summer of 2019?
Yeah.
You know, you just think out if this form is sustainable and he could have played like this the whole season, you know, I don't think we ever would have got close to Liverpool or Man City, to be fair, with how many points they got. But you do just wonder, you know, would we have been able to stave off that awful first 6 months of last season with him in there?
Yeah. Last thing I'll say on the West Ham game is all three scorers from the academy, and that would be a nice segment into the youth loan and women's roundup, but we'll mention PSG very quickly. Basically, from my point of view, very frustrated, very frustrating night, a missed opportunity, chances missed by Martial. They'll live long in the memory. Fred should have been taken off at halftime, but the second yellow was a blatantly incorrect decision. So the kind of framing of it is the framing of it by pundits and fans alike as it was shocking to keep him on. It's been proved to be the wrong decision. I was frustrated at that as well, because he should have been taken off. Yeah. But talking as if it was an inevitable red card, when actually Fred played well in the second half and played pretty cleanly, and he didn't actually commit another bookable offence and was incorrectly sent off, was frustrating. But generally frustrating night all round, and a game where we could have beaten PSG again, even though the scoreline was eventually 3-1.
Yeah, frustrating for so many reasons. I think we actually played really, really well.
Yeah.
Without a doubt, probably alongside Leipzig, actually, our best performance at Old Trafford this season. You know, PSG, I think they dominated the first sort of 20 minutes and obviously got their early goal. But from 20 minutes in until PSG scored their second, which was what, about 70 minutes, I think, we were by far the better team. And even after PSG scored their second goal, we looked a little bit panicked and started hoofing the ball a little bit too soon for my liking. But I think, you know, we still did pretty well, and there was enough there to suggest that we might create another chance. Obviously got hit on the counter-attack, which happens. It's not a big deal, the third goal. But, Yeah, it was. It's just so frustrating because not only did we play well and probably deserve to win and had the chances to win, but now obviously the implications that it has for us getting through or potentially not getting through to the knockout stages as well. It would have taken the pressure off, allowed us to rest a few players going into this final game of the Champions League against Leipzig, because I think winning would have got us top of the group as well, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
It's frustrating for a lot of reasons, but yeah, primarily because the game was there for us to win. Martial had two very, very good chances. One of them in particular, you just cannot believe that he missed. Cavani obviously hit the bar with a sublime chip at one point that would have been a perfect way to get his first Champions League goal for United. It's really, really frustrating on so many levels. And again, because we actually played really, really well.
Right. Positive news. We'll go back to it. Under 23s, under 18s, women's team, all won. So here's your youth loan and women's roundup. A fantastic weekend all round for Manchester United. The under 23s kick things off on Friday night with a 3-1 win against a good Southampton side. 3 points against Saints to take United to sixth in Premier League 2. Manager Neil Wood will be really pleased with the win. Southampton's Obafemi and Slattery are both good talents and caused United problems, but the Reds went ahead through Anthony Elanga. The Swedish winger hit the wall with a free kick but lashed in the loose ball well. 23 seconds into the second half, Facundo Pellistri doubled United's lead. It was a great assist from 16-year-old Shola Shortire, who moved away from two defenders with a good turn and played the perfect through ball to Pellistri. The Uruguayan had loads of time to think about it, but finished well into the bottom left corner. Saints got one back through Obafemi, but United wrapped the game up late on with another from Arnaud Puigmal, who's been consistently brilliant all season. The under-18s beat Liverpool on Saturday morning in a frenetic game, leading 2-0 at halftime thanks to goals from Charlie Wellens and Charlie McNeil. Both of them were set up by Noam Emran, United's man of the match. He has 2 goals and 5 assists in 7 games this season. Liverpool came back brilliantly, scoring 3 after the break and taking the lead. Leighton Stewart scored 2 of them. But United responded well, regained control of the midfield, and Emran was involved again as Joe Hugel equalised for the Reds. Hugel grabbed the 84th minute winner as well as a blocked shot from Charlie Savage fell into his path and he turned and converted well. He's now scored 6 goals in 3 under-18s games, and United are now clear at the top of the under-18 Premier League. In low news, Thies Chong started for Werder Bremen on Sunday against Stuttgart. Andreas Pereira was in action for Lazio, had a goal disallowed by VAR as they beat Spezia 2-1. James Garner started for Watford in a 1-0 defeat against Cardiff. Dishon Bernard kept a clean sheet for Salford against Barrow in a 1-0 win. Dylan Levitt is still unavailable for Charlton. Joel Pereira was not in Huddersfield's squad against QPR, but Mate Kovar started for Swindon in a 2-0 defeat away to Gillingham. Atalanta's game against Udinese in Serie A was postponed. Amad Diallo Traore was set to be on the bench. United women remain at the top of the Women's Super League after making it 4 away wins from 4 on Saturday. Leah Galton put United ahead against Aston Villa after 25 minutes. Hayley Ladd played Galton through from the edge of the area and she tidily tucked it home. It wasn't until late in the second half that United deservedly doubled their lead and wrapped the game up. They had plenty of chances to do so, and it was one of the more difficult opportunities that was converted. Ella Toon gloriously chipping Villa keeper Weiss after she'd charged out with her goal. United are 3 points clear at the top of the WSL now.
Right, Jack, Tuesday night, RB Leipzig away. It's a shame, this one, because it will be United's first, well, it is United's first away game in Leipzig. It's a shame because fans can't go. It would be a brilliant trip. It'd be a massive game. Germany in December, Christmas markets, a new city. It would be a brilliant away trip for United fans, but unfortunately not for this year, not for 2020. It's still a massive game though. And as we were talking about before, win against PSG and we would have qualified already, but now we don't have it all to do against Leipzig. And I don't think all of the pressure is on us, but we need a result. We need a draw or a win, and we'll go through a win. And if we better PSG's result with a win, then we'll go through as group leaders. Leipzig, who we battered in the first game at Old Trafford, 5-0. I mean, a bit of a generous scoreline for United, that, but we did play very well and we did tear them apart on multiple occasions. But Bayern Munich's biggest challengers this year, RB Leipzig, the only team in 54 games to stop Bayern Munich from scoring back in February, and they played Bayern again this weekend, drew 3-3. It's not a game where, even though we only need a draw, you can be that confident, is it?
No, not at all. Because I think both because of ourselves and because of the opposition, Leipzig are a very good side. And just because we beat them, was it 5-0 at Old Trafford, I don't think that means that we can take this lightly. I think that scoreline was firstly a very, very, very good performance by United, probably our best alongside the two PSG games all season. But secondly, I think it goes a little bit under the radar that actually the first sort of half an hour of that game, we were under a lot of pressure. Leipzig were pretty dominant and, you know, could easily have nicked a goal or two in that first half an hour. So this isn't going to be a walkover at all. I think the big thing that I hope is that we don't go into this game with the mindset of we just need a draw and let's sit back, soak up the pressure. I don't think we're good enough, and we've shown that before. I don't think we're good enough defensively at this stage to be able to rely on us just sitting back for 90 minutes and see out a 0-0 draw. I'm not saying that we need to be going all guns blazing and, you know, playing with four men up front the whole game, but I think there needs to be a balance here of, it's really easy in these games to get way too conservative and get way too risk averse. And I think that's the complete wrong way to go about it.
Yeah.
I agree. the best way to get through here and see it out when we need a draw is to go out and win the game and, you know, have it done by half time, be 2-0 up at half time. Obviously, I know that's best case scenario and is unlikely, but I think it's really important that we don't just get sort of bogged down in, oh, we just need a draw, let's just sit back
and see.
Because it's just not going to work.
Yeah, I think United's best chance of, and I mean, we're going to win, so our best chance of winning is by going on the attack, because Leipzig have a lot of quality. The point is that I don't think this United team will be good enough defensively to grind out a draw.
No, not at all.
And I'm not sure that's related to the defence necessarily, but to the people in front of them, that United's attackers aren't that good at pressing. They aren't that good at coming back and helping out in defence. Same goes for the midfield. And it conversely, Marcus Rashford is the Champions League top goal scorer on 6 goals. And conversely, we've scored 5 goals against Leipzig at home, 4 against Basaksehir here. We've scored 3 against PSG in 2 games. This is a very good attacking side. I guess the question is, well, I was going to say the question is, how do we start an attack? But it's very dependent on Cavani and Martial not being injured, because both of them went off with injuries against West Ham. Cavani at halftime, Martial in the second half. Let's say without Cavani and Martial, how do United start? For me, I'd probably go with a 2 of Rashford and Greenwood up front. I'd go for a diamond with Van der Beek, although Van der Beek has had a few knocks, but Van der Beek, Bruno, no Fred available, so perhaps Pogba and Matic.
Yeah, I reckon the diamond will be the way to go. Leipzig are very good in midfield and very good at pressing the ball. It worries me slightly that was the way that we tried to set up against Leipzig last time, and it was a little bit of a struggle at times. But, you know, I think ultimately that probably is our best formation. The thing that I think I'm anxious to see is how we deal with Leipzig's press. I think that diamond might help a little bit in giving us a few more options in the centre of the park, rather than having, whereas in our 4-2-3-1, having our wingers pushed a long way forward. I think that will probably be the lineup. You know, we have a few injuries. It's not terrible, but again, the squad depth that we have now makes that a bit easier to deal with. I think the other thing, just going back to the conversation of how we should approach this game, the other reason, obviously, the priority is to get through, but the other reason we need to be approaching this game with a positive mindset is to win the group, because since all of the other English teams, it looks anyway like we'll probably end their group top, our options, if we finish second, are very, very difficult for the last 16. Assuming that Chelsea, City and Liverpool all finish top of their group, if we finish second, our likely opponents in the last 16, it's one of Barca, Dortmund, Bayern, and then either Mönchengladbach, Shakhtar or Real Madrid. So that one obviously is not too bad, but I mean, we have a 1 in 4 chance of getting those. And outside of that, we have a 3 in 4 chance of getting either Barca, Dortmund or Bayern, which is not exactly what you want to see. Obviously, you'd love to see it from the point of view of it be a great game and a great night for the club, but if our chances of getting through, we should be top in this group.
Yeah. Going back to the team, I think the problem with the diamond is that, given Leipzig's pressure, we could kind of get overcrowded in that midfield with players who aren't always that good at the ball. I think Van der Beek is good enough to keep possession under pressure. And I think Greenwood sometimes is, Matic often is, but Pogba and Bruno are going to give the ball away, and then you've got too many bodies in there and Leipzig can take advantage and quickly break through. Also to take into consideration is that Leipzig wing backs are particularly potent. Angelino has 6 goals and 4 assists in all competitions from left wing back, and that is going to be a problem in the Diamonds. But I think I think I'd probably start with that Diamond with that personnel, because it gives you the option of very quickly swapping. Because if you have Rashford and Greenwood up top, you just shift Rashford onto the left, Greenwood through the middle, and probably Van der Beek on the right. And that's a very quick fix, and you can change that within the game without too much complication. So yeah, I'd probably go like that. What are you predicting, Jack?
I'll go for a very tense and very nervy 1-1 draw.
Yeah, I'm not sure. There's a bit of me that thinks it's stupid to predict a United win, and there's another bit that think it's the kind of thing we'll do.
It's a bit stupid to predict any United game at this point, yeah. I think.
But for a while now, because of our good form in the Champions League, it's kind of seemed certain that we would qualify, and the fact that we might not is worrying, or scary more than worrying. Because we kind of have deserved to qualify, so to mess it up would be a big problem. And it's that loss to Basaksehir that's the real problem, not the defeat to PSG. I'm going to go for a 2-2 draw, although there's not a huge amount of me to think that's at all possible, but there we go. Right, we're going to go to our Patreon Q&A. We're going to wrap the show up. We'll be back after the Leipzig game, experimenting with a 2-show-in-a-week format, because Leipzig game's big, and then it's City in the derby on Saturday. So we'll be back with a kind of 15-minute episode looking at the Leipzig game, reviewing it, and previewing City afterwards. But we're going to go to our Patreon bonus Q&A now. We've got some really interesting questions on players we shouldn't have let go, on Anthony Martial, on Erling Haaland, on Jadon Sancho, on Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, on first half performances, on Edinson Cavani, on Mike Tyson. Plenty to get through. If you want to become a patron and support the Manchester United Weekly Podcast, you can go to our Twitter at UTD Weekly Pod. That's UTD Weekly Pod, P-O-D at the end there. And you can find information on how to sign up to become a patron, pay a little bit of money each month, and get bonus content in return. Otherwise, from Jack, you can hear from him on Twitter throughout the week at
UTD Tate, T-A-I-T.
And you can find me at Harry Robinson 64. And as I say, the podcast itself at UTD Weekly Pod. That's P-O-D at the end there. Right, we'll go and chat to our patrons for a little longer. But for the rest of you, have a great week. Goodbye.
Podcast Network.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from, with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.